How's it going, everyone? Welcome to a brand new podcast by myself, Scott Robertson, but this is not on any of my platforms. It is on the Project Ditz channel, and this is Plus Added Time. This is where I take a look back at the weekend's football results and see how they did. If any things I would like to add up, I will be covering obviously the Premier League because that is one of the if not the best league in the world. I will be talking about Scottish football because I am, of course, from Scotland. So I'll probably give you a guide on the Scottish Premier League, maybe do a little detail about maybe the teams that are involved each week. Also picking up some of the key points from the other big leagues in Europe. So we're diving into the Bundesliga, the Serie A, La Liga, and the Ligue 1. All three leagues are back. But I also will be delving into the random league of the week, which is where I have asked Siri to pick a random country in Europe. Whatever country it lands on, I will talk about the league itself and some of the teams that are involved. So let's begin with the Premier League. We're two weekends in, and the only thing I could say about this weekend was goals, goals, and goals. There was, I believe, over 40 goals in this weekend's Premier League. But I want to talk about the main game from the weekend, which was my team, Liverpool, taking on Chelsea. Liverpool ended up winning the game 2-0 thanks to two goals from Sadio Mane. Yes, Liverpool deserved to win the game, but Chelsea went out 10 men just before halftime when Christensen got sent off for a last-man challenge. But I kind of wanted to talk more about Chelsea. Yes, the other thing was Thiago made his debut at halftime and he completed all these passes and he did look great. But I think for me, the issue with Chelsea was, yeah, they desperately need a new goalkeeper. I mean, the second goal, Kepa just kicks the ball literally straight to Sadio Mane and Mane scores to make it 2-0. This keeper is so short of confidence. It's unreal. If Chelsea are going to challenge with the talent that they have, they need to invest in another keeper. And as I'm recording this, they're looking at the Rennes keeper, Mendy, for about £22 million. Yeah, I think for Chelsea, they need to invest in another keeper. I've never really heard of the guy Mendy. I don't know if he's great or not. Maybe the Chelsea faithful can let me know what it is. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was how Frank Lampard used Kai Havertz and Timo Werner in this game. And it didn't make a lot of sense to me. Timo Werner is a striker. But he was playing out on the right wing. And he played Kai Havertz as sort of like a false nine. Yes, Havertz has played in that position with Bayer Leverkusen, and it's worked really well, but it doesn't work with Chelsea. If you want to play Havertz and Werner in the same team, Werner has to be the striker, and Kai Havertz has to be either the number 10, and you change to a 4-2-3-1, or you play him as one of the centre midfielders, but allow him to bomb forward. Because I believe Ziyech will play on the right. Mount might play on the left, but he might play someone else. Werner up front. And Havertz is number 10. With maybe Kante and Kovacic in the midfield. Alonso, Thiago Silva when he's fit. And then Reece James, I think, is now going to be the starting right back instead of Azpilicueta. Or they might go with Thiago Silva, Azpilicueta. And then, obviously, Mendy probably is keeper in place of Kepa. But, yeah, I think he played Kai Havertz and Timo Werner in the wrong positions. That's the sort of thing I would do with Chelsea, is that I'm worried that Chelsea have just bought for the sake of buying because they can't. But I feel like they need to change maybe their formation, not the way they play, but their formation just to try and fit these guys in. But Liverpool looked good. I mean, Fabinho slotting in at centre back, I was a little bit sceptical at first, but he was able to do it so well. And Thiago looked, again, as I said earlier, Thiago looked great. He can play in that deep holding midfield role, the playmaker role, or he can slot in like he did on. Well, he kind of played in the deep line playmaker role because that's where Henderson played, but Henderson obviously went off injured. Do Liverpool need anything? I'm not too sure if Liverpool. Maybe another centre back, so we don't have to rely on Fabinho's kind of slotting in. Yeah, we got rid of Lovren. He's gone off to Zenit. He's gone to Zenit. I think maybe another centre back. Maybe like a young sort of up and coming centre back. That's where I would probably go with Liverpool if they want to add a bit more quality into this squad. The other thing I kind of wanted to mention is Manchester United's 3-1 defeat against Crystal Palace. I think Solskjaer got this so wrong tactically. Manchester United, under Solskjaer, want to play the counter-attacking style. And it works. It works against like the teams that like dominate possession. He likes to soak it in, and then with his pace up front, likes to hit the teams on the counter. But Crystal Palace are a similar team to Manchester United. They like to play on the counter-attack as well. When Solskjaer's team has more possession, I really don't think he knows what he wants to do. He is set in the way of playing on the counter. He had to change against teams that play in a similar way to him. The other thing was his team selection. Pogba was rank, by the way. He was just awful. Why he didn't start Donny van de Beek? But the other thing was he played Fosu Mensah and Dan James on the right-hand side of his formation instead of Wan-Bissaka and Mason Greenwood. That did not make any sense to me whatsoever. And this is the first time I feel like Manchester United fans are actually questioning whether Solskjaer is actually the right man for the job. Manchester United fans, what do you think? Are you still a believer of Ole at the wheel? Or do you think now you can stop blaming Ed Woodward and his transfer policies? Which you can still can. But now are you starting to question Solskjaer as a manager? What do you guys think? But Palace were really good. I mean, Zaha looked great in this. Yeah, his value's gone down. He's getting a lot older. Yes, he said so many times that he has wanted to leave Crystal Palace, but he gives it everything for his team, and that is what I like. You see players that you know they want to leave, they just don't put in any effort whatsoever, and I just feel like with Zaha. He wanted to leave last season. Yeah, he didn't perform well. He only got 3 goals. He got 2 today. He put in a great performance. So, yeah. But Manchester United, I think, weren't great at all. A team that were good at the weekend were Tottenham Hotspur. Tottenham were excellent, I thought, at the weekend. They beat Southampton by 5-2. Yeah, they still conceded 2 goals, but they're still sorting out their defence. I do feel Mourinho is going to go to a back three. So he's got to play Doherty at sort of what he played at Wolves at right wing back. He will have Reguilón, is that how you say it? The kid that signed for Real Madrid. It'll be Alderweireld, Sanchez. I'm trying to remember who he played at the weekend. Who did he play at the weekend? Well, he maybe played with a back four, but I think he wants to play a back three. And Kane and Son were just wow. Son scores four. Kane assists with three of them. Kane gets a goal himself. That is a deadly, deadly duo. And the thought that Gareth Bale might be coming back into the team after a year out. Well, not after a year. A month, because he will be out for a month because he's just not been playing football. It may take him a wee while just to get up to match fitness. But Tottenham look good, and it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I think Mourinho, I think Spurs need to maybe look at another centre-back. If they're going to play as back three, because Doherty plays as a right wing back, as I said, I think maybe another centre-back and something in the midfield, because I feel like they've not got really a lot of creativity in the midfield. I feel they've got a lot of similar players, and Ndombele could be that creative, or he'll be that sort of box-to-box. But they do have a creative player. Well, Dele Alli is similar to Ndombele. They don't have that one that can ping that pass. What do you guys think? The other thing is, obviously, I'm recording this on Tuesday. It's Manchester City played their first game of the season last night against Wolves and looked really good. Kevin De Bruyne is the best player in the Premier League. I'm saying this because I am a Liverpool fan, but De Bruyne is the best player in the Premier League. He looks like he hasn't lost a step from the end of last season. Phil Foden, I respect him for putting in a good performance after the troubles that he had with England. The other thing is that they never... Wolves are a great side. I love watching Wolves, or as someone has said, Portugal FC. I think Wolves will be okay. I think they don't have the worry of Europe anymore, which could help them in the long run. If you look at a team like Leicester, who also won at the weekend, they've got Europe this season, and that might hinder them. It's always interesting when a team other than the big six have European football, they've always seemed to struggle. And Wolves didn't really, but they still struggled a little bit. They still finished seventh. They were probably one of the only exceptions, but Leicester might, but they got a great win at the weekend. They beat Burnley 4-2. There was another thing I wanted to mention about the weekend. There was two things really, and it involves the promoted sides. Leeds, how good is it to see Leeds back in the Premier League? I mean, when I was growing up watching football, Leeds were one of the best sides in the league. They were consistently in the top four, got to a Champions League semi-final, and then they spent too much money, and then it just went downhill. And then this guy, Bielsa, comes in the start of 2018-19 and wants to rebuild Leeds. And he almost does it at the first attempt, fails in the playoff semi-final. They faltered. Yes, with all this coronavirus, they got promoted as champions. And in their first two games, they've scored 8 goals, conceded 6, and they play some amazing football. It is such a joy to watch. And I give Fulham credit for not backing down in the game at the weekend, because they were very poor against Arsenal. And they again went 2-for-2 at the weekend. I'm liking the look of Arsenal. Arteta's getting them playing, which is great to see. But Leeds were just like, no, we will still play. We will not change the way we play. Which is what I love about Leeds. Bielsa sitting on his bucket, just absorbing the information. What I will recommend is the Sky did a documentary about Bielsa. I would highly recommend that you go and check it out. I think it's on YouTube. I think the documentary is on YouTube now, so you can go and check it out for yourselves. But the other promoted team was West Brom, who got battered. Well, did they get battered by Everton 5-2? It was 5-2. Dominic Calvert-Lewin scores a hat-trick, who seems to be this new striker under Carlo Ancelotti. But the thing with Carlo is, you forget how great a manager he is. He inherited a bad team last season and still got them playing. But now he is bringing in the players that he wants. You've got Allen, you've got Doucouré, and you've got James Rodriguez, who was superb at the weekend. Superb. He is getting the players that he wants. I'm not convinced that Jordan Pickford is a goalkeeper. Mainly because I don't like the guy. I think he's a very arrogant, very cocky. And then when he fucks up, it's quite funny to see. But it was what happened with Slaven Bilic. It was like, oh, and West Brom scored a fantastic free kick with Matias Pereira. That was a great goal. Great goal. But it's what happened at half-time before the second goal went in. Kieran Gibbs gets sent off for an off-the-ball incident on James Rodriguez. It was like a slap or a punt. You don't really see it from a distance. Well, you see it from a distance, but it looks like a slap. James has gone down in a bit of a heap. Kieran Gibbs is sent off. Or was it Oxlade-Chamberlain? I can't really tell. Bilic goes over to the ref and has... He was remonstrating. He wasn't like telling the ref he was a prick or anything like that. I'm surprised he didn't. And the referee, of course, is Mike Dean, who's like a meme lord. However, Mike Dean was just like, you know what, I'm going to just send you off. I think he just did it for the sake of doing it. It was like, why? He was just remonstrating. Just give him a yellow card. It wasn't he got a yellow, he got a straight red. I'm just like, really? You're just doing that because I think you just did it for the sake of doing it. No, I didn't like that. I did not like that at all for Mike Dean. I think Bilic, it looked like he was being aggressive, but I don't think he was. I think that's just him. And Mike Dean was just like, no, send them off, don't care. I went, you. Anyway, the other results from that weekend, I'll just briefly run them forward. So that was sort of the main talking points I kind of wanted to cover from the Premier League. The other things were, Brighton got a good win against Newcastle. Newcastle are like... played great the first week against West Ham, then were absolutely diabolical against Brighton. As I said earlier, Arsenal got a good win against West Ham. West Ham were one of my picks to go down, so I'm doing not too bad there. Aston Villa picked up their first win of the season in their first game of the season against Sheffield Wednesday. Anyone think Sheffield Wednesday... are going to have second season syndrome? I think so. Well, maybe both of them will have second season syndrome because they both obviously stayed up last season. And I think Villa getting Emiliano Martinez, the goalkeeper who came in for Arsenal at lockdown, was a great bit of business. And then he saves a penalty from Lundstrom. Villa have done a bit of good business there with Martinez. And who else was playing that this weekend? I have totally forgotten. I am just a way to have a look myself. Did Burnley play? Did Burnley? I'm sure Burnley played. Yes, I did. They were the team that Leicester beat 4-2. I apologise, everyone. Yes, Burnley played, and they were playing Leicester. So that is pretty much what happened in the Premier League. So I'm going to move on now and talk about a league, my local main Premier League, the SPFL. Hopefully I can give you guys a little bit of an education here. Some of you might know about Rangers and Celtic, but then there are other teams in this league. So I kind of wanted to mention, obviously, the main result. Rangers is my team. Liverpool and Rangers, yes, it is a weird combination, I know. But Rangers dropped points at the weekend, but they were playing a very, very good Hibs team. And this is the team, like, me and my dad have a conversation about, because we are Rangers fans. And he's seen the game and not me. I only saw the highlights. But we both agreed that Hibs were like one of the first teams that we were able to sort of, were actually going to have a go at us. They went and actually played football against us. And yeah, I think Hibs deserved at least a draw. I predicted a draw before the game, but I think the way that Rangers went behind and we battled back to get ahead, the second goal is just some brilliant football, but we conceded a sloppy equaliser. And that's always been the problem with Rangers since Gerrard's taken over. If we've gone ahead, we don't seem to necessarily hold on to it, or we do not have a plan B. Especially when a team is sitting with 11 men, with 10 men behind the ball. I'll give you an example, Livingston earlier this season, the other team that have taken points off of us. They have sat back and we couldn't break them down and the game ended 0-0. I think Gerrard needs to learn to have another game plan. That's what I feel. And that meant we were only now 1 point ahead of Celtic. But Celtic have a game in hand. But Celtic won at the weekend, but they scraped a win, shall we say. They beat Livingston 3-2 at Parkhead. It looked comfortable to begin with, but Livingston actually went ahead in this game. Then Celtic kind of came back into 3-1, and then it was a bit of squeaky bum time for Celtic when Serrano scored with about 10 minutes to go. But Celtic held on. They were a bit scrappy, but the problem is they're getting the wins without playing great. Rangers are not. And Hibs were the first team to actually score goals against Rangers this season. Rangers have gone on a run of their first 7 games scoring in every, keeping a clean sheet in every game. Something we couldn't do last season. Now, there are other teams in this league. Motherwell and Aberdeen, who both brilliantly qualified for the third qualifying round of the Europa League. Aberdeen have got a trip to Sporting Lisbon. But Motherwell basically put on a first half masterclass against Aberdeen. They were 3-0 up inside 23 minutes with goals from O'Hara, Long and Mugabe. I thought Motherwell would kick on, but no, it ended up finishing 3-0. And I think Motherwell had a sloppy start, but I think Europe might have helped hindered them maybe a little bit. And they were lying bottom, but they've picked up 2 wins on the spin. And Aberdeen, this is their first defeat in 4. They'd lost the opener against Rangers, and then they had 2 of their games suspended because 8 of their players broke coronavirus rules. They've won their next 4 and then obviously have lost this one. But I still think those two teams will finish in the top 6. They'll be challenging for 3rd, but I still think Hibs will finish 3rd. The only issue I've got is who is going to finish in the 6th place spot. Dundee United were the team that got promoted. Hearts were the team that got relegated. And Dundee United picked up another win. They beat St Mirren 2-1 thanks to Lawrence Shankland scoring. Now, Lawrence Shankland has been their top scorer in the past two or three seasons. Maybe somebody can elaborate on that. He got his first goal at the weekend against St Mirren. I mean, I've never been a St Mirren fan. I never liked the manager, Jim Goodwin. But I think they've got enough to stay up. I think Hamilton will be the team that will go down, because they lost again at the weekend to Kilmarnock, and Kilmarnock had 10 men. And St Johnstone lost 1-0 at home to Ross County. So as I look at the table, if you just... Yeah, so Rangers are top, but they have... Celtic are second with a game in hand. Hibs are third. Aberdeen are fourth. Ross County are fifth at the moment. And it's Livingston that are bottom, along with Hamilton and St Mirren. I would say St Johnstone, St Mirren, Hamilton and Livingston. I think those will be the four teams that will be battling for relegation. And maybe adding Kilmarnock, I think Motherwell will pick up. I think Ross County, Dundee United for the final the final spot in the split. That's probably how I would do it. That's probably how my early prediction for the top six, shall we say. Now we are going to move on to Europe. We will start with the Bundesliga. The Bundesliga came back this weekend, and already the best team, the European champions, are arguably the best team in the world, the Bayern Munich, were just unreal at the weekend. I mean, they beat Schalke 8-0. 8-0. And possibly have one of, if not the best front three in European football. I'm not in world football. Because Leroy Sané made his debut. You got him on the left. Serge Gnabry on the right, who was told he wasn't good enough for West Brom. And you've got the man who should, in theory, have won the Ballon d'Or this year, Robert Lewandowski. How scary is that front three? It's just ridiculously good. I mean, Schalke have been struggling. They've been struggling since the lockdown. They're managed by David Wagner, the guy that used to manage Huddersfield. How he is still in a job, because they were shockingly bad since they got back from lockdown. And yeah, I'm thinking Wagner could be a goner. One of the other big games from that weekend is, of course, Borussia Dortmund taking on Borussia Mönchengladbach. And it was the tale of 17-year-olds, because the first goal was set up by 17-year-old Jude Bellingham, scored by Gino Reyna, the son of Claudio Reyna. And then the Norwegian freak Erling Haaland scored twice. He's a freak. He is an absolute freak. Is old Erling. But Hertha Berlin picked up a big win against Werder Bremen, who are still surviving relegation. Augsburg beat the Union Berlin. Hoffenheim beat Cologne 3-2 with a hat-trick in the last minute from Kramaric, who some of you may have heard of, played for Leicester. Yes, he played for Leicester. That is all pretty much what the Bundesliga has to offer. We're going to move on to the... where will we go next? Yeah, let's go to Syria. Because there was a big game. Well, there wasn't a big game. It was an important one. It was Andrea Pirlo's first game in charge of Juventus. And he picked up a 3-0 win over Sampdoria with goals from Kluzveski, Leonardo Bonucci, and of course Cristiano Ronaldo. The Kluzveski is a Swedish winger who scored on his debut. Juventus are chasing their 10th Scudetto, but only half the teams played this weekend. The other big teams, AC played last night and they won 2-0 thanks to two goals from Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Napoli picked up a 2-0 win over Parma. Crotone, one of the new promoted sides, got beat 4-1 by Genoa. And that is pretty much so. Inter, Atalanta, and Lazio all didn't play at the weekend. They will play next weekend. And La Liga, Barcelona haven't played this weekend, but they were playing in a sort of charity shield, like warm-up game against Elche. They only won by 1-0, thanks to a goal from Antoine Griezmann. But it was more to do with a Mr. Messi, because obviously the saga of the summer was Messi saying, I'm leaving Barcelona. And then they're like, no, you're not, you're staying. He looked like he couldn't give a flying fuck. He just doesn't want to be there. I think it'll be all change in March because Barcelona have their president election. Because the guy that's in just now is probably public enemy number one in Barcelona. But I think it'll be really interesting to see how Barcelona do this season. But then if you compare Real Madrid, they didn't exactly get off to the best start, as they were held 0-0 by Real Sociedad, who, of course, is the new team of David Silva. But it was good to see Martin Odegaard, who was on loan at Sociedad and had a fantastic season. He started for Real Madrid. And, yeah, it was great. It was great to see, like, him, after the great season he had for Sociedad, finally actually getting a chance in the Real Madrid side. He didn't play for long. I think he played for like 60 minutes. But I think that will be the future now for Real Madrid. I think you'll see a bit more of Odegaard in the first team. But Real were disappointed and nil-nil draw. But Sociedad are a very, very good side. Very good side. In Liga, PSG finally got their first win. They beat Nice 3-0 away from home, thanks to goals from Mbappe, Di Maria, and Marquinhos. Whereas the team that they beat last weekend, Marseille, were only held to a 1-1 draw by Lille, but that's Lille are again a good side. And I think that is pretty much all the European leagues covered. Yep, that is pretty much all the European leagues covered. So, I wanted to talk about a random league in Europe. I wanted to talk about a random league that you might not hear about, or you might not get an opportunity to talk about, shall we say. It'll be completely random. And we're going to talk about the Belgian First Division A table. Not the table, the actual league. The Belgian First Division A. Belgium has 18 teams in their league. But the way they structure it is a bit... it's a bit different. And they were obviously one of the first teams, first leagues to stop their league after the coronavirus. Some of the teams you probably have seen in sort of the Champions Leagues, Europa Leagues. So like Anderlecht, they're managed by, of course, Vincent Kompany. Standard Liège, you've got Club Brugge, you've got Genk, you've got Ghent, you've got Zult Waregem, Royal Antwerp, Kortrijk, I'm not going to Beerschot, but currently at the top of the league, after playing six and winning six, is Sporting de Charleroi. That is the team that are currently top of the Belgian First Division A, or it's called the Juniper Pro League. But I'm going to see how they, because their format is a little bit weirder than some of the teams in. Okay, so the regular season, each of the 18 competitor teams, they play each other twice for a total of 34 matches, August to April. Then, a playoff phase is then played for May. There is a championship playoff. The point system in the championship playoff is the same as during the regular season, except that each team starts with half the points they won in the regular season, rounded up to the nearest. The points are gained by rounding and deducting in case of a tie. The top four teams from the regular season enter the championship playoff, with the first place team winning, becoming the champions of Belgium. Alright. Then, the teams ranked 7th to 4th. Oh, from 2016, the system was changed. So before, the teams from 7th to 14th after the regular season, where the teams ranked 7th, 9th, 12th and 14th entering Group A, and the teams ranked 8th, 10th, 11th and 13th entering Group B. In each group, they played three opponents twice, with the winner of each group plays in the final in the two legs to determine the winner of the playoffs. The winner of the playoffs two then plays a home and away game against either the 4th or 5th place team from the playoffs one for the final Europa League ticket, which with the opponent depending on whether the Belgian Cup winner entered in the top four of the playoff one or not. Right. From 2016, however, the system was changed, as now the teams ranked 7 to 16 are joined by 6 teams from the Belgian First Division B, divided into 4 groups of 4 teams, with the winner of each group now play a single match to determine the overall playoff winner, with the winner playing the 5th place team from playoff 1 in a single match for the final Europa League spot. Lovely. Then, until 20... So, and they also had a relegation playoff. Until 2015, a relegation playoff was played between the teams ranked 15th and 16th in the regular season. So the 17th and 18th were the two that went down. 15th place team started the playoffs with 3 points, whereas the loser of the relegation playoff was relegated to the second division. The winner of the playoff had to enter... What? Right. So, 15th and 16th played each other. The loser of the relegation playoff was relegated to the second division regardless. The winner of that playoff had to enter the Belgian second division final round with 3 teams from the second division. The winners of this final round played in the first division the season thereafter. But then from 2015, it was ceased to exist. Where so basically, three teams now for the Belgian League automatically relegated, whereas the team 15th place go into that Europa League playoff, which I talked about earlier. Oh boy. Right. Did you follow all that? Because I was confusing myself. But it's amazing that Belgium has a fairly decent league from the sounds of it, but it just seems very, very confusing. But they've got one of the, obviously the best sort of national teams now in the world. But man, that playoff system, absolutely sucked. But that is going to do it for the very first episode of Plus Added Time. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I have. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Scott Robertson. I am your coach, your manager, your chairman, your CEO. I'm your goalkeeper. I'm your defender. I'm your midfielder. I'm your forward. Until next time, it's Fergie time.